And welcome back to another fantastic episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I'm your host, Mona Sheikh. We have a pretty fantastic guest today. She's a really good friend of mine. She's hilarious. You've seen her on Laugh After Dark on Amazon. She opens for Marc Maron, the very funny Melanie Vesey. Thank you so much for joining us, Melanie.
Of course, Mona. I'm here. So happy to be here.
Dude, you are like literally one of my favorite people on the planet. Out of 7 billion people, you are definitely up there in the top five for me.
Thank you, Mona. Thank you.
For sure. I just love you so much. You've been so instrumental in helping me with my social media and also just pumping me up. Just like so I don't feel like total garbage. So when I feel like garbage, I holla at you. Not that people should do that, that they should constantly drain Melanie when they feel like trash and just hit you up. That's not what I'm advocating here, but I'm just saying.
Well, they can. Through my company. They can.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. Your amazing company, Promotional Rescue, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've just learned so much. You're so fantastic and such a guru when it comes to promotional stuff. So, folks, you're looking for promotional stuff, social media, hit up my girl, Melanie Vesey, Promotional Rescue. She's great.
Now, thank you.
We were just briefly talking about your show you have now. It's called Make It Rain.
Make It Rain Comedy. Yes.
How did that concept come along? What is the concept about? I just saw a stripper pole and I was like, yo, what the fuck is happening here? I must know all about this.
Yeah, so the show is a monthly show. It's at Cheetah's Strip Club in Hollywood.
Yes.
What happens is I have LA's best comics. They come and do a set on the mic and then they do a set on the pole and the audience makes it rain. So the audience throws money. So I don't ask people to strip. That's not where I'm at here in this Me Too world.
Yeah.
However, and people have stripped. They have gotten down to G-strings.
Wow.
And then some people we had Margaret Cho on the show. She just took off her coat and she twerked and people threw a bunch of money. So it's mostly just about having fun. Everything works, body, sexuality, positivity, having an amazing time. And I think what the element of it is because people are in a strip club, there's this energy in the air. It's very different from a comedy club. Yeah. We've just gotten the best performances out of people. So, and how it actually got started is a little bit of a funny story. So my co-producer is Gina Bloom.
Yeah.
And she did
who I love. Gina's great.
Yeah, Gina's great. At very funny New York comic. And she did a variety show there. People threw money at her. And then I was on the next show with her at Ruthless People. And she showed me this pile of money. And I was like, where did you get this pile of money doing comedy in LA? And she was like, well, I did this variety show. And I was like, okay. And I just kind of was like, interesting. I'll circle back around to that.
Yeah.
And then I contacted her about a week later and I was like, who books that show? You know, so mommy can make some money doing comedy.
Hell yeah.
And then she was like, well, it's a New York comic. It's a variety show. It's not here. And I said, you know, we're taking this idea, right? Like, and we'll call it Make It Rain Comedy. And she was just like, let's do it. So I called Cheetah's. It was an instant green light. We did the show. Margaret Cho was our first headliner. We got 150 people out and all the comics get paid. So what we do is all the money that hits the stage, we collect it and then we split it between all the comics at the end of the night.
I love that.
Everybody makes money. You can follow it at Make It Rain Comedy on Instagram because we have an amazing photographer who takes killer photos of everybody.
Yeah.
And it's just, I figured out a way to make money doing comedy in LA.
Yes.
Don't take my idea.
Listen, I think once you build enough IP online, I think people are gonna get called out if they try to steal that. So
exactly.
You better, you know. It's such a great concept. I saw it and I was like, what a great idea. And I think it came around the same time when Hustlers came out, right?
I think maybe Hustlers came out maybe a couple months before, but
yeah,
there, like a couple weeks ago, J-Lo did her thing at the Super Bowl. You know, she's 50, she's on the stripper pole, and I'm like, do you see how powerful I am with my show?
Look at the effect I'm having on J-Lo over here.
Come on, this is crazy. Yeah.
I mean, how outstanding was the Super Bowl halftime? Holy
it was crazy. I only saw portions of it afterwards, but I mean,
Well, you can watch the whole thing. You know, it's on YouTube.
She's just incredible. I mean, give me a fucking break. You know what I mean? She's just making us all look bad.
Shakira and J-Lo. I think it's the most watched halftime. It's the best of all time. Like, that's what they're rated. It has over 100 million views already.
Wow.
You know, I mean, what they brought on and what they did is just simply outstanding. And this, you know, and I want to talk to you about the backlash that they were facing after the Super Bowl halftime, where the there were people coming out and saying that their clothing was inappropriate, and my God, they don't want their children looking at that. And I'm like, Adam Levine was fucking practically naked the year before on stage, and none of you people had any complaints about that. I mean, what do you think? What did you think of like this kind of backlash that they were facing? And it's always women, by the way. It's always the women. It's always us. Our bodies are too sexual, not sexual enough. Maybe sexual. Do a little bit more. Don't do enough. It's like, what the fuck do you want from me?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is to like see women as like sexual objects. Also, women of this age, you know what I mean? These aren't. I mean, J-Lo is 50. I mean, which is incredible. I just feel like people are sometimes uncomfortable with power. You know, with women that are, you know, powerful. Like anything, sometimes people's light casts shadows in other people's lives. I think you just have to kind of like ask yourself, like, there's nothing shameful about what happened and what they're doing. It's entertainment. Yes, of course, it's sexy. It's not the end of the world. Everyone's going to fucking live.
That's right. That's right. I mean, just the constant double standard. You know, when do you think this double standard is going to eventually go away? Like, do you think we get to see this in our lifetime? Like, when does that happen?
I don't really know. It's also something that doesn't cross my mind. Like, it's not anything that is a rudder on my ship. Like, I would never consider that. You know what I mean? Like, so I can't really worry about what the mob wants. I can only kind of focus on what brings me joy. I can only worry about what's happening in my corner of the world. And even having a show where people, and I have like men and women and gay, straight, black, white, you know, fat, skinny, whatever. I have all sizes, shapes of people on my show expressing themselves in a way that's hilarious and exciting. I never questioned for a second that that was something that I shouldn't do, or I've never thought like that. So it doesn't really occur to me. Like, when people bring it up sometimes, I'm like, oh, right. People think like that. And I'm like, I forget. Like, it's not. I would never make decisions based around that fear.
That's right. I mean, I you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. She's she's become a friend. She's a doctor, a mental health and trauma doctor. She's pretty fantastic. She's based in New York. I just wrote an op-ed piece with her in Forbes that came out about 2-3 weeks ago. And her and I were having this conversation about the Super Bowl halftime, because she's Indian, I'm Pakistani. And I was like, man, it's so great to see Latinas up there and empowering, and this is just so fantastic. And I asked her, I'm like, do you think we'll, in our lifetime, like, do you think women of South Asian descent would ever be able to, you know, do that kind of thing on, you know, such a main stage like that? And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, I don't know either. For us, like, the cultural barriers are a lot bigger, I feel, maybe versus, you know, for the Latin community, perhaps. You know, the Latin community is a lot more embracing, I feel, about women's sexuality. It's not so much the case in ours, in our situation. I mean, you know, you're an American white woman. Like, I mean, so that would make sense to me, where something like that wouldn't even cross your mind, because you didn't grow up with that kind of barrier, right?
I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, so, like, I guess I did. Do you know what I mean? That, like, women don't do that. But I also know, too, that, like, there's something inside of people, such as yourself, that, like, it's like not your brand. Like, you didn't adopt this. Yes, people might apply this to me, but it's never been a part of like my mindset where I should listen to that. You know what I mean? Yes, I grew up in a suburb of Michigan in the 70s and 80s. I was supposed to get married. I was supposed to have children. I wasn't supposed to like follow my dreams or do whatever it is that I want. I wasn't supposed to be with a woman. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't supposed to do all, but it's never been in my mind where like, oh, I'm going to listen to that. So I do understand that there are barriers for you know, for different women, people of color, what have you. And I feel like it comes from the outside. But I also know, too, that like inside people that are that are like that are leaders that are change things, like it's like their initial thought is not to have that thought, and then people try and hold them back, right? But it's like you keep moving forward, you keep making your decisions, you keep doing what you're doing, and that's how the change happens incrementally, you know, a little bit at a time, and then that starts to move the needle where it's like, yes, it's more accepted, people wouldn't question what people are doing, you know what I mean?
Right. I mean, I honestly, like, I still kind of struggle sometimes. I think it's taken me, my God, such a long time to even, like, post any kind of pictures that show my body in a certain, like, a sexual way. And even then, it's, like, a little uncomfortable because it's not, like you said, it's not my brand. It's not something, you know, you're just supposed to, for us, you have to consistently cover your body, cover your face, not be, like, sexual, don't be sexual objects or sexual beings, but be sexual being because you have to get married and then settle down and have children, you know?
Right.
So for that part, you can just like hoe it out, if I may say so myself.
Right.
And, but then everything else, you just got to cover it up. And it's just, for me, I feel like that, maybe not to that extreme, but I feel like even if you're a white American woman, there are still like restrictions and expectations that, you know, as a woman, like you're not allowed to like flaunt your sexuality or allowed to be the sexual being. Like, do you think that is still the case? Do you feel that way? Because I think it is.
Yes. I feel like in middle America, or even, I don't know, outside of LA, you know, you go one hair outside of LA, and yes, I'm sure there is a cultural norm around that. I seriously, like, and maybe this comes from a place of privilege, I don't even know, but like, it doesn't even cross my mind. Like,
wow.
I'm often shocked that people are shocked about what I do, or shocked that people care about what I do. And it's funny because I do feel like, yes, I think that's probably about living in a bubble. All of my partners and friends, and you know, I it wouldn't even occur to me to hold somebody else down for what they want to do. It wouldn't even occur to me.
Right.
I'm actually stoked when people are doing what they want to do. And if I don't understand, I go, oh my God, I don't understand. Or like, please tell me so I understand more. I would never want to stop somebody from doing what they want to do, even if it's shocking to me. I have friends who are porn stars, and I'm just like, tell me how it works, because I have all these crazy ideas in my head. Are you okay? You know, I guess, yes, I guess it is. I guess I've never let that decide for me what I do. And I've been lucky that I live in areas, you know, New York, LA, what have you, where I can just move forward. And I do truly feel that there's an audience that doesn't give a fuck about what I do. I know that there's an audience that doesn't give a fuck about what you do.
Sure. Yes.
But there is an audience that does. That's not my audience. That's not my audience who's going to be mad that I'm married to a woman, or that I do what I do, or I talk about what I talk about, or I don't know, that I'm comfortable with my body, or I celebrate other people's bodies. Like, I can't even get in line with it. Like, I can't even.
I honestly, like, can we briefly talk about what an incredible life and journey you've had. I've known you for a bit, and I've gotten a chance to learn about your journey and your life. But let's start with the fact that you're married to a wonderful lady who is
amazing.
She's a chef.
I love that. I won.
You so won. Dude, if I married a chef, I would look like a fucking house. I don't know how you're able to curtail this.
I mean, the amount of weight I've gained in this relationship, like, I'm as heavy as I was when I was pregnant with my son. Like,
I don't blame you.
She still thinks I'm so sexy. And I'm like, what would you have done when I was hot? Like, I don't even fucking know. Like, when I was 118 pounds, like, you would melt. You would turn to dust and
that
blow
is,
away.
So. I love that. Yeah, but that's true love right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's that's just true love. And now you have a son. And he is how old?
15, Harrison.
15, Harrison. You know, my nephew's name is Harrison also.
It's a popular name, actually. I didn't know that. In 2004, I didn't realize there would be 100,000 other Harrisons. But there are a lot out there.
I've met your son. He's adorable. Such a well-adjusted kid. Great communicator. So good job on that to you guys.
Thank you.
Good job on that. What is that like raising a teenager?
Oh my gosh. Well, first off, he's a really great kid. I'm very lucky in that.
Yeah.
I think the challenges right now are just that I'm slowly handing the reins over to him.
Yeah.
And watching him have successes and watching him have failures in life. And that is hard to watch and to support somebody through a failure or support Sure. somebody through a challenge and not take control of it, even though I want to, and watching him kind of like find where the bumpers in life are, which is also very challenging. I didn't have parents that were invested in that for me. So I need a lot of support myself to be the parent that I want to be. And I need a lot of help to like stand on my own two feet, be the strongest and best Melanie I possibly can be so I can support him. Cause it's about, I can't give away what I don't have.
Right.
So I can't make him a strong person if I'm barely hanging on. So
right.
A lot of that is about taking care of myself.
I 100% agree. Now, you and I have talked about, and on this podcast, we talk a great deal with our guests about how pain and trauma drives them. Do you feel like as a stand-up comic, as an artist, do you feel pain and trauma is a big drive for you?
Oh, my God. It's probably the original drive. I mean, I just know that like I have a sickness where I need to attention, you know, and it's almost unnatural. You know what I mean? Like I need success in this area. That's an almost unnatural drive. I need a certain amount of attention that I just don't get in everyday life, which means I have to stand on a stage with a microphone in my face or I have to be on a set with a camera in my face. Like it really does come from a place of lack as a young child.
Yeah.
And that drove me into dancing. It drove me into acting. It drove me into comedy. So yeah, I do believe that it absolutely, if I was well-adjusted, I don't think I would need this.
Listen, 100%. Well-adjusted people have boring stories. Like their stories aren't nearly as fun as getting your ass whooped when you're a little kid, you know, on a consistent basis. That's not nearly. Can we delve a little bit into your pain if you're comfortable talking about it? Like what was the pain? Where did it come from? Did it come from both your parents? Did it come from one parent? What was that pain and trauma?
It was totally a collective effort. You know, my parents were very young. I'm not sure that I was planned. You know what I mean? They had their own hopes and dreams. I think that what you were talking about in our previous conversation, you know, my mom was married and pregnant by the time she was 19.
Wow.
That was, you know, what you did in 1970. That's what you did. You know what I mean? That is, my mom is a real victim of that. And, I don't, maybe the victim is the wrong word. Like, I think that she just, that's what you were supposed to do back then, you know?
Right.
And I fought that tooth and nail. And I was just like, I don't want that. I'm not going to be that. Now, did I end up married and with a child? Absolutely. At 19? No. You know what I mean? Like, well into my 30s, my baby was planned. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
A completely different set of situations. I just feel like they were super young. They didn't have the ability to, you know, meet the needs that I needed. A lot of it was just a lot of absenteeism, even when people were in the room, just a lot of neglect in that way. Unfortunately, a lot of, you know, marriages. My mom was married 4 times by the time I was 10.
What's your mom? Is your mom Muslim by any chance? What's happening?
No. No, she's just a fiery Italian. You know what I mean? And I really think that like my mom is kind of similar to me. Like, I think my mom just wanted the attention and I think she just wanted a party. I think she just wanted to feel a part of something. And what better way to fucking have a wedding every other year for fucking 5 years? You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Dude, that's like some Elizabeth Taylor status stuff right there.
It is. And I have all of the like, in her closet at her house, like I have all the little like bridesmaids outfits, like because I was in her bridal party.
Wow. Except so, for the like, first one. For the rest of the three.
Yeah, they progressively get bigger, you know what I mean, over time. So yeah, I just feel like and here's the thing, I don't like, for me, it's not, I don't really harbor on that stuff too much. I mostly focus on like what I do now to make sure that this life is long and I'm taking care of myself.
Yeah.
That pain and that damage is always going to be there, but I truly kind of use it now as like a tool and I can kind of harness it, those defects, into an asset. the assets that I have from that is I have hyper control. That's a defect, but I use it as an asset. So my hyper control helps me be a great director, a great producer. It helps me like get shit done. It helps me run my business. So that's something that started very bad, but turned good. Right. Yes. And then it's like being sarcastic, cutting shit to shreds, being kind of a smart ass, using humor to deflect was started as a very, from a negative place, but now is absolutely positive. I get paid for these problems now. Wow. Do you know what I mean? Right. So I do feel like you can have all these problems, but like, how can you harness them to like be an asset in your life as opposed to a constant defect in your life?
100%. I feel like, don't you know, like as stand-up comics, like we have friends or have had friends who, you know, suffer from a lot of mental health problems because of, you know, the trauma and the pain that they grew up with. And, you know, and perhaps, you know, they haven't maybe found their path right now to peace and to kind of find a way to, you know, use it as a positive rather than a negative and basically become alchemists in their own lives. Like, have you, I mean, I've had three stand-up comic friends in the past, three stand-up comic friends and one acupuncturist friend, believe it or not, who committed suicide. And it's, you know, it's pretty hard. It's really, really hard when you, like, know these people personally and when they pass on, you're just like, what could I have done? Like, have you experienced something like that?
Yes. I mean, yeah, I do know that there is that question, the what could I have done. What's really challenging about that is I feel like to a certain extent there isn't anything that you can do, right, except to be a supportive person in that person's life. You can help people get the help that they need, but they have to be willing to, like, get that help, right? I also just feel like for me in stand-up comedy and watching, like, there's, you know, been some more recent suicides in comedy,
yeah,
which is that to not kind of, I feel like, and this is just really my opinion, like not to keep on giving air to this idea that like you can't be married or be in a relationship or be a healthy person and do comedy.
Yeah.
I feel like, I know we come from a sick place, but like you don't have to be sick and maintain sickness,
yeah,
to do comedy. So like find a partner, you know, find, whether it's a group of friends or, you know, you don't have, excuse me, you don't have to sacrifice your life to do comedy. And I feel like when people are like, I'm out 100 nights a week and like marriage means my career will be over and kids mean that my fucking career will be over. No, it won't.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. There might be times where it's a challenge, but like, is that what you really want? I know there's a way for you to be married and have kids and have a life and still have a career. Like, I know there is. Like, I know there's a way for you to be healthy and have friendships and not grind yourself into a nub to the point where you've got nothing left. And if you don't have success at the end of that, because I think that the problem is they're like, if you just keep grinding, you'll be successful. And I'm like, no, it's not.
That's right. There's no guarantee.
There are no fucking guarantees. So if you're going to be on this fucking journey, please try and be comfortable in your journey. Get support, get loving people around you so that you're not just alone at the end of it with no success that you think, because I know that we all have unhealthy ideas of what success is, right?
Yeah.
Academy Awards, multi-million dollar homes, you know, yeah, big fat bank accounts, Lambos, whatever it is. And it's like, maybe success is just being in the middle. I don't know. I'm just happy with the fact that I'm alive and I have food in the fridge and gas in the car and people ask me to perform. Like, I think that's the success.
Right.
But we're sick. You know what I mean? So
that's right. Because, you know, we look at that and immediately we take that and set that as a standard for ourselves. But the truth is, like, what is your spiritual journey? Like, what is your personal journey from where you were to where you are? For me, honestly, I would have never in a million years thought that I would ever be in a position to sit here and have this conversation with you. Right. So for me, it's like such a look. I'm an immigrant. Like, I moved at 15 from Pakistan. I was a lost little girl. I knew nothing from nothing. All I had was a dream and a passion. That's all I had. No money in the bank, no real skill set to speak of, no contacts of any kind. I mean, my God, like what do I have? Like nothing. So I think a lot of times I have to sit down and literally have a conversation with myself. Like as an adult, it's almost like a split you know, split sides of me where I have to constantly remind myself to how far I have come from having absolutely nothing to being in a place where I actually can sit here and, you know, have be sitting in a studio in Vegas and have a conversation with a fantastic, you know, friend like you and talk about, you know, so I feel like, but it's a constant struggle. I'm not going to lie. Like there's a lot. And I think I've talked to you about my, you know, depression and my anxiety. I just, it's a lot of shit that, you know, I'm still kind of working on all these 13 years of therapy and all that shit and just constantly. And I'm just like, how, I think I was asking my therapist the other day. I was just like, how fucking long am I going to be in therapy for? And she's like, you can be in therapy for as long as you want. You know, I mean, she's like, it's just not dependent on you. And I was just like, right. Yeah, but what's the real answer? I was like, how fucked up am I, doctor?
Did she give you an answer? Did you get the date? Did you get your expiration date?
I was trying to get my expiration date, dude. She's so wonderful. My therapist is awesome. I've actually made her cry a few times, which, you know, was very touching. She's been quite wonderful. You know, I think sometimes you go to certain therapists and you like kind of plateau out of that relationship. I haven't plateaued out of my relationship with her yet, but I mean, have you gone to therapy and what has therapy done for you?
Oh my God. I've been in therapy for, you know, 30 years. I don't know.
Wow.
Since forever. So, in answer to your question, like my spiritual journey, didn't really begin. And I got sober, in 1994. So I'm sober 25 years.
Wow. Amazing.
And thank you. And then in recovery, you know, it is a part of the steps to get a higher power of your understanding. Some people call it God, you know, whatever. I've had a very, up and down relationship with that higher power. So I meditate, I do everything I possibly can to maintain that relationship with a higher power, like no matter what it is. You know, sometimes it morphs, you know, from like a real God, like an angel type situation.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just like other people, when other people are talking to me and they're telling me things and I get that feeling in my chest where I'm like, oh, this is right. This is the right thing. And then as far as therapy goes, like my first therapist actually got me sober because she was like, how much are you drinking? And yeah. I was like, oh, like, you know, 3 times a week, which means every day. Like whenever anyone like cuts anything in half, you know what I mean? It means like fucking every day, you know what I mean? And pot and wine. And I'm also like one of those people that's like just a garbage head. Like whatever you're doing, I'm doing. We're doing ecstasy, great. A Coke, I'm in. You know, like I'm just one of those people that's like, whatever's happening here, I'm on board with it. You know, so and then she and I got, that's how I got sober. Currently I find that talk therapy at this point, because I've been doing it so long and I've worked on myself so much, it's not enough for me. So next Thursday I'm starting EMDR therapy, which is specifically trauma-based therapy.
Because I've heard of it actually.
I have some real trauma. I was, you know, I was shot by my girlfriend about 20 years ago. Which is like, it's always frustrating when people are like, I have trauma. I don't mean to mock people, but I'm always like, you know, I get it. Like life is
traumatic.
I got
shot at, like what?
So like I was shot. It's a real thing for me. It changed the molecules inside my body. I have real pain around this. Sometimes I have a very difficult time regulating my emotions. Mm. And I feel like it stems from that.
Yeah.
And everything that I've done with talk therapy, with staying sober this long, I feel like has helped, but I've reached a limit and I need to go beyond that limit of my, comfort in this world. So I'm going to this EMDR therapy where I don't exactly know how it works. It's supposed to have to do with your eyes and tapping. And it actually like they have you bring up the actual trauma and you actually like go right for it. It's not long-term, it's short-term.
Mm.
And I've heard amazing things from people about this, this new technique, and I'm totally down. I'm just like, 'cause I can talk about this till the fucking cows come home. It's not helping me completely where I need it today.
Is it hypnosis? Is it like a form of hypnosis?
I think it's a kind of thing, but I don't know. I don't remember reading anywhere where they to say specifically that it's hypnosis, but I do feel like it's something that like the synapses in your brain, like it helps kind of rewire the shit and kind of reframe the trauma. and help kind of deactivate it, because I have certain things, like real triggers in me that are undeniable, and I cannot just like pause. Like, I can't just be okay with it. Like, mm-hmm. It gets bad for me sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I haven't been shot at, but I have my own, set of bullshit that I kind of grew up with. It's so funny. The other day I was driving, and I was like touching the top front part of my head. And there's a huge bump inside on my scalp. And every time I touch it, it like brings me back to the memory of being like, I think I was like 12 or 13 years old. And my brother took my mom's heel and stuck it in my head. And the heel was stuck and I had to pull it out. And I got like this weird bump. And every time I touch it, and I'm just like, those were one of my favorite shoes. I used to wear those shoes a lot. The one, the heel that he stuck in my hand.
That is terrible.
I was like, that was a nice pair of shoes. My mom had good taste in shoes. Yeah, I mean, you know, we all have kind of, I've heard really good things about EMDR, and maybe I should consider doing it. I don't know. It's, I definitely have certain triggers that I kind of go off on sometimes. So now you haven't done EMDR yet. You're going to do it.
No. So I'm starting it next week. So it's just been one of these things where it's like, I've really reached a limit with my current level of therapy and recovery where I just need more help. Like, I'm always searching for more help. And I'm really at that point where I really need more help, on more eyes on the prize.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, now you've been doing therapy, for comedy rather, for how long, which is also a form of therapy.
I'm back now about 5 years. So I started doing it like, 16, 17 years ago, but I did it for about 2 or 3 years and, you know, was doing well back then, had a show at the Comedy Store and, you know, with Adam Barnhart, helped him run his show. And, I performed all the time. And then I got pregnant with my son and I didn't have, the support to have a small child at home and right. do comedy, because comedy is a nighttime gig. So I stopped doing comedy. However, I switched over my storytelling to making films, and I directed 4 short films that all went to festivals and did. That was my version of storytelling at the time, because I could do it around the schedule with a child. And then as soon as I got back, like, the support, I met my current wife, and she's just so helpful. And she was like, "Well, I'll be here, and you can go out and do comedy." And I was scared that everybody was going to hate me because I wasn't going to be home for dinner all the time. And they were just like, "Get the fuck out of here. Like, go do your thing. You know, you're better when you're happy and performing and doing, you know, you're doing Melanie on Full Tilt Boogie." So now I have the support to do that, you know, to travel and to, you know, have the support to do that.
What's a Full Tilt Boogie?
Full Tilt Boogie. I don't I think Full Tilt Boogie is just kind of slang for like, like you're just going for it. You know what I mean?
Like, I've never heard. Is that a Midwest? Is that a, what is that? Is that a Michigan?
I don't know.
What is that?
It feels very disco to me, like Full Tilt Boogie. You know
full
what I mean?
Full Tilt
like,
Boogie.
Like your foot is on the gas.
Do you
know
have
I mean?
A shirt
like,
for this Full Tilt Boogie? I'm going Full Tilt Boogie.
In the Urban Dictionary, Full Tilt Boogie.
How
so,
freaking
yeah.
cute. I've never even heard of that. That's that sounds really amazing. So now what you did Laugh After Dark for Amazon. You have a special out called Wild Animal?
Wild Animal, yeah.
Wild Animal and Reverie. Reverie, mm-hmm. is that a streaming service?
Yeah, so it's an LGBTQ streaming platform. It's kind of like the gay Netflix, yeah.
Gay Netflix. Oh, I love that.
It's all gay content, gay friendly, gay, you know.
I'm like just such a huge ally and just like try to do, you know, I was thinking about this whole ally thing recently and I was like, man, I was like, I think people don't realize how much we need allies in each other. Not just even just the minorities. Even a straight white guy needs an ally. Like,
yes.
Everybody needs an ally. We cannot survive and thrive without our allies. You know, whether it's a straight Muslim woman supporting the gay community, or you know, a gay woman supporting a straight Muslim woman, and helping her, you know, with her career, helping her even, you know, with her own personal, you know, bullshit that she's going through. A straight white guy who, you know, needs to have, an ally. in, you know, possibly, you know, a Black person or, you know, a Latino person where they're, you know, learning about a culture or, you know, being educated or becoming wise about something. I feel like everybody needs an ally. Like, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I completely agree. I'm getting a plug because my phone might die. Unfortunately, I just got a notification that it's low.
Okay. We can't let the phone die.
I don't want to go out on us. Yeah. Oh my God. I absolutely think that everybody needs support. Everybody needs. Oh my God. Everybody needs support in what they're doing. And I just feel like it's. Sometimes I feel like it's a part of the collective consciousness to kind of like bootstrap it and to do it by yourself. But that's exactly what we were talking about in the last conversation, which, you know, kind of circling back, which is that you can't be doing this stuff alone.
Yes.
You need help. And like, I don't know, I just feel like it's an old thought process to like, I'll just do it by myself. You know what I mean? So when prisons want to punish prisoners, they do solitary confinement. That's what they do, right? To kind of punish that person. That's the highest level of like punishment they do in a prison. So like when you isolate yourself from other people, you don't have a connection to other people. You're putting yourself in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
And I just feel like we need each other. We need people to fucking either check us to say like, oh, you're kind of crossing that line, or like, hey dude, I'm noticing that you're not doing this, that, and the other thing, or like, what's going on with you, or what's happening, or like, hey, you need help with that? You know what I mean? Like, anytime I've ever asked for help and gotten help, I'm always shocked that I'm like, oh my God, people are willing to help me for free. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What? Like, it's crazy. You know what I mean? But yes, everybody needs that. Everybody needs support and needs allies. And absolutely.
100%. Is your phone vertical or horizontal right now?
Horizontal.
Oh, horizontal. Okay. Awesome. Awesome. I just wanted to check in on that. I think my biggest problem is that I isolate myself. I feel most of the time I'm just like, I'll do it myself. Why am I going to bother anybody? I don't want to be a burden. And I was recently reading about that. Where does that come from? This feeling of thinking that you're a burden on society or you're a burden on people. And that comes from children who have been abused, who come from a lot of pain and trauma. So they always feel like they always have to be kind of walk on eggshells and always be like good and always just be constant givers and not be takers because, you know, they're not, they were taught that, you know, they couldn't have it. So you constantly are just giving, hoping that you get maybe an ounce of love, maybe an ounce of approval, maybe an ounce of attention. So you're just constantly giving. And I think that's like one of my biggest challenges that I go through, which is, you know, not to isolate myself. And I think I sometimes go through days where I talk to nobody. I mean, no one. Like I put myself in a solitary confinement of my own because I'm whatever bullshit I'm going through, whatever my depression is, whatever my anxiety is. And I'm just like, I can't put this on other people. It's not their bullshit. It's my bullshit. So I got to fix myself before I go out there.
Mm. I understand this. I do feel like that is the trauma because I think that you were told that as a young person. But I also feel like, as adults, we sometimes just have to take contrary action. We have to do the opposite of what our brain is telling us to do, right? So it's like, don't bother anybody. But it's like, hey, maybe you should fucking bother somebody because you don't bother people. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So
You're not a burden. I think that's the one thing.
I also just feel like sometimes I have to just self-parent myself because, yes, I have had times in my life where I have worn people out, right? Where I'm like, and I'm constantly in a drama and I'm constantly going through a breakup or I'm constantly like, and I have had friends who are like, we're done with you. Like, it's too much, right? So I do need to find the balance with being, how can I take care of Melanie so that she is still has give and take with her friendships?
Yeah.
Because I do know that, like, I do hate it when friends only come to me with their fucking bullshit, but then don't invite me to their party. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I nursed you through the last three fucking breakups and that time you got fired by your job and your drinking problem. But I see you're having a birthday party, but I'm not invited. And I'm like, what? You know what I mean? So I have to be a complete person. Like, I have to be right-sized, right? I can't be too small and like, oh, my God, sorry, everybody. And I can't be too big where it's like, I'm the fucking best. You know what I mean? Like, I have to be right in the middle.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like a little pendulum, right? Yeah. Sometimes I fucking feel like the best and sometimes I fucking feel like shit. And I can do all of it with everybody.
Sure.
To make sure I'm taking care of my relationships. Because at the end, it's really the relationships. It's the relationships that are going to help you with your success. It's the relationships that are going to help you through the hard times. It's always the relationships.
100%. Do you feel like being a married woman and being a mom has helped, like has enhanced and kind of helped you become a better comic? Definitely a better person. I'm sure that it helped you so much. I feel like, you know, me having a significant other would probably be better because I feel like the older I get and the more single I am, the weirder I'm getting. And there's nobody to tell me that you're getting fucking weird, Mona. You're fucking weird. Check your shit. Like, this is not normal. And what am I dog gonna say? My poor dog is just like, this bitch feeds me. I can't fuck with her. So I'm just like, exactly. Yeah, I love you, you fucking crazy bitch. Like, but I need like a person to tell me that was fucking weird, Mona, getting weird. Getting real fucking weird. Like, do you feel like having being in a relationship that does that for you? Like also, and that kind of bleeds into your comedy and your work?
Well, it's funny. I don't necessarily, like, I do know that, like, there are challenges with being happy in comedy sometimes. And I have jokes about it because I'm totally like, the good life is killing me. Because it's like, I don't have that, like, oh my God, you guys, I'm poor. What about being single, Tinder? You know what I mean? Like, I have to dig deep sometimes to find that comedy because it's my first instinct, I think, for most comics is to just go towards the trauma and the pain and then talk about it on stage. Mm-hmm. I just have to find other places to do it. Like I just have to make sure that I don't also just get complacent inside of it. Like, I'm happy. Why leave the living room?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's just a different set of challenges. I think everybody has challenges. I think it's all the same amount of energy. It's just like where it's coming from.
Right. All the same amount of energy where it comes from or where the energy is going to go.
So like everybody's got something that's in their way, right? Whatever it is, whether they have something that like, whether it's their relationships are in their way or the fact that they have a relationship or don't have a relationship, whether they are broke or have money. Like it doesn't matter like what your thing is.
Mm.
It's going to come for you in the shape that's supposed to help you figure it out, right? So we all know that like people who are rich, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're fucking happy.
That's
we
right.
see all kinds of fuck, you know what I mean? So it's not over there, it's what's coming for us specifically, right? So in the shape that it's made for us, right? So for me, it's just being wildly happy, and that's my problem.
Aww, I love that. I love that for life. I'm worried about you in comedy, but I love that in life.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's funny because it just means that like I have to sometimes dig a little bit deeper. So
yeah.
I even in my like thing with my writing, like I have a whole list of things where it's like I can tap so much from my past, you know.
Sure.
Breakups and crazy parents and, you know, situations that I've been in and blah, 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 blah. I can't sometimes always just leave it to my current life because life day in, day out is actually really good right now.
Yeah.
I'm not starving. I figured out how to make a little bit of money. You know what I mean? Like
sure.
I'm not living on the edge. You know what I mean? And I also just don't think that that's good long term. Like that's going to give me a heart attack. Like I don't want that.
What,
you know?
What you mean? Like all the constant trauma,
oh
the
God.
Constant drama. Yeah, for
yes.
sure.
Fuck no.
Yeah.
No, not interested. Not
for,
interested.
For sure. You know, for me, it's like I've noticed this thing about myself. I do, and I don't know if you do this, where like things will be going well, and like you know, there's a roof over your head, and money, and food in the belly, and you know, bills are paid on time, and everything is fine. And then subconsciously, my brain is like, "This is too good. Let's fuck this up. Let's fuck this up."
Absolutely. Like I'm waiting. Like I've been with my wife 9 years, and I'm literally waiting for like her to one day, just to find out she's been cheating this whole time. Like there is a part of me.
Oh my God.
I'm totally like, you can't be this good. Like there's got to be like a invasion of the body snatchers pod next to the bed. I'm going to find out one day that you're living a double life that like, but I'm like, I know where she's at all times. You know what I mean? Like
aww.
We have the thing where we can find our friends. Like I see where she's at. I see where my kid is at. Like, yes, I do have that,
yeah.
But it's not based in any sort of facts. It's all just Melanie's cockamamie brain, you know?
Right, right, right. Of course. Yeah, I honestly don't even know what me being in a relationship would even look like. Like, I just don't even know who I would be in that relationship. Like, I'm telling you, like, my level of weirdness is just fucking, it's so fucking weird. Like, sometimes I just bust down and dance moves in front of my dog, and my dog just looks at me. I was like, I cannot imagine being in a relationship and doing this shit in front of someone. They'll be like, I want a divorce, like, right now.
No, hopefully they would love it. I mean, I talk about it on stage. Like, so I'm really into, like, shitty reality TV. Like, I fucking love it. I didn't know this about myself.
Oh, you and I, you do this whole bit on stage about this, don't you?
I do. And it's so funny because it's kind of, and my wife is like, watch your shows. Like, because I try and keep it a secret. Like, I don't want her to know that, like, I'm garbage inside. She's just like, watch your shows. And I'm like, I know, but I'm embarrassed that I watch this. And she's like, that's just who you are. Like, she truly accepts me for loving the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, it's really like, I don't know how it's possible. It could, because maybe I wouldn't love somebody for being me. That's all I'm saying.
My God.
I would just be like, oh God, get it together. Like, what is going on?
And while you're just like, let's watch what happened next. It's like, oh, get your shit together. God, let's watch the next episode.
We just watched the last episode of The Bachelor and she was like, oh fuck, I'm hooked. We have to know what's going on. I'm like, I know.
Oh my God.
You see?
Oh my
garbage.
I wish I had I wish I could do that. You know, the kind of shit that I get. So this is going to sound really dark. There is this amazing podcast. I love, like, crazy dark shit, like serial killer shit. I'm, like, a big fan. There's an amazing podcast on Spotify called How to Make a Killer. And they literally go down every single serial killer that existed in the U.S. and U.K. And they talk about their gruesome details and how they picked their victims and what they did to them. That's the kind of shit I listen to in my downtime. Tell me, what normal, adjusted person would be like, you know what, honey? I love you for that dark shit. Like, what the fuck?
I would really hold the space that there is someone who's totally like, love it, and then I'm gonna raise you one, and I'm gonna
raise you one. I am a serial killer.
Yeah, I'm gonna
and
be
you're
into
the next
it.
Victim.
I'm gonna be crazy into it, and I'm gonna love you for it. And yes.
Yeah, you know what? I guess there's 7 billion people on the planet. There's got to be one crazy person who's loving fucking How to Make a Killer and then just hollering
it's
at me and be like,
a popular podcast. Why don't you just go into the How to Love a Killer fucking Facebook group and say, who wants to go out on a date? Like, I'm just, and seems like shooting a fish in a barrel.
P.S. Don't be a serial killer. That's your only requirement to not do those things. Now, what's going on with you got some projects lined up? What are you working on?
So right now it's Make It Rain Comedy is happening monthly. My business, Promotional Rescue. I've got a couple irons in the fire right now that haven't been solidified, but some exciting stuff that's kind of on deck. Other than that, I'm performing regularly. I'm trying to think what else is happening. Yeah, I've got two things that are kind of happening that are going to be kind of big announcements, but I'm having meetings about them in the next couple weeks. But right now, Make It Rain is at the front of my dance ticket. It's a super fun show. Yeah. The next show is March 14th at Cheetah's Comedy Club, and then the next one after that is April 18th. You can go to @MakeItRainComedy on Instagram. We post regularly about it. Or you can go to MelanieVesey.com, and that's where all my shit is.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. We're gonna start wrapping up, but I do want to talk to you about, before we wrap this up, you started doing comedy. You've been doing it for 15, 16 years, then took a break because you had a kid, and then solidly doing it for the past 5 years now?
Yeah. I took like a 10-year break, like 10 years, literally, like not... like barely doing it, and now back 5 years. Yeah.
I mean, but you also had a lot of success early on in the sense that, you know, you did the movie with Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm. Man on the Moon. I played his sister, the Andy Kaufman movie. So I played Carol Kaufman, his sister.
Right. Which is such an incredible role. Now, do you feel like when you were doing comedy like 15, 16 years ago versus now in the past 5 years, do you feel there's a lot more opportunity for you now than was 15, 16 years ago?
Yes, I do. I feel like Yeah, I do feel like it's a little bit of a different kind of climate for how many either female run shows or making sure that there's multiple females on a lineup. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, yes, there just seems to be. And I also just feel like that's a lot of that has to do with social media. You know, I'm in Facebook groups that are, you know, for women and are inclusive, you know, LGBTQ, people of color. Like, I sometimes go there first to talk to people about stuff because I know that I'm going to get, a very honest answer about stuff. So, yes, and I've seen, you know, many shows, that are inclusive and diverse, and that makes me super happy. I just know that for myself, whenever I'm booking a show, I look at the amount of people on the show, how many women, like how many people of color, like I'm totally like, it just can't be like one note. You know what I mean? Like it's gotta be this, you know? So, I do feel like it's very different. I just know that, at the end when I was like pregnant and at the Comedy Store, it was like whatever I was triggering inside of people as a pregnant comic at the Comedy Store, like, this was way before Ali Wong. This was way before Amy Schumer. This is way before people had pregnant, you know, comedy specials. Mm-hmm. It was palpable how much I was not like welcome there as a fucking, you know, pregnant woman. And that was one of the reasons why I was like, holy shit. Like, wow. I'm upsetting people by just being here. Yeah.
By just being pregnant and just by just being a pregnant comic being on stage.
I think that what I was representing was everything that was being rejected. Like, it was like, how could you fucking be a mother? Or like representing what is rejected, which is that like you can't have a career and have a family.
Right.
And I just feel like there is a way, people. Like, I clearly.
Beyonce's doing it.
Right. I'm like, yes. And I understand, like, I had to take a break. But here's the thing, comedy was still waiting for me when I got back around.
Sure.
Right. I still had a creative journey. I switched it over to making movies. Like, it's okay. And as soon as I came back, everyone was right where I left them. It's not like I fucking had to start from scratch. It was like the second I came back, it was like I was back on the show at the Comedy Store doing a weekly show. I did that for 2 years and booked that show. So it was like, I just also feel like to tell people, like, you're not missing any opportunities. Like, it really, like, your journey is your journey. And if you need to take a break or if you need to rest, that's okay. Like, you're not missing any boats. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't think the universe is here to be like, well, fuck you. You had to take a rest. You know what I mean? Or fuck you. You had to go raise a kid. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
I do think there's, and I'm doing great. I'm doing great as a woman who is not in her fucking 20s, not even in her 30s. You know what I mean? Back doing comedy, doing it. It's going well. So
I love that so much. I feel like, do you know, one of the things, and I'm sure you get to hear this too, where I would have like, regular like pedestrians sometimes. They're like, there's not enough women in comedy. I'm like, actually, there are.
Yeah.
They just don't get the kind of breaks that dudes get.
Yeah. I just also feel like people just love to say shit. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of women doing comedy. Are you supporting them?
That's right.
Are you Googling them? Are you going to the all-female lineups at the Improv? I can think of 3 shows off the top of my head.
That's right.
All fucking female lineups. Killer. Killer. TV credits. Amazing. Like,
that's right.
Are you supporting them? Are you requesting them at your fucking local comedy club?
That's right.
Are you going to the, are you hopping on their newsletter? Are you following them on social media? Like, what are you doing to support women in comedy or people of color in comedy? Like, what are you doing?
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
So I just feel like people love to talk a lot, but I'm like, well, you can change that today with
that's
your
right.
follow.
That's
with
right.
your ticket, with your ticket price, with showing up someplace to be like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to go to Women Crush Wednesdays at the fucking Improv, or I'm going to go to the Mermaid Comedy Hour, or I'm going to go to the Ladies Room at the West Side Comedy Club. Like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to support women in comedy.
That's right.
Or whatever.
100%. And I mean, every time people tell me that, I'm like, what? Did you do your research before you said that? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know
people
how many female comics are out there?
People just love to talk. It drives me crazy.
People talk so much shit, man. It's fucking
so
ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Melanie, do you want to give us your social one more time before we wrap up?
I'm at Melanie Vesey on all my social media platforms. I'm at MelanieVesey.com is my website. My company is called Promotional Rescue. And my current big old show is at Make It Rain Comedy on all platforms as well.
Awesome. Melanie, I love and adore you.
I adore you.
You're the best. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
Yes, doll. Thank you so much. Yay.
I love you. Thank you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. That was the amazing Melanie Vezzi. And I love her for it because I've been saying her last name wrong this entire time until she just corrected and she said it's Vezzi. And I was like, I'm an idiot. But now I've learned something and I've grown as a person because of it. You guys are awesome. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube, Minority Report's digital series. You can follow us. And we have a new episode every Monday. I'll see you guys next time.